Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Caught Offside with Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney.
Oh, yes. Caught Offside. Just outside of New York City, from an apartment in Brooklyn, New York, Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney. Ooh, wow. What's up, brother?
Thursdays in the Premier League. Can't beat that for blockbuster action. And like you pointed out to me, sometimes two very flawed teams can create an absolute cracker. I speak, of course, of Chelsea and Manchester United. And then there was drama at Anfield as well.
Yeah.
Serious drama. It was a great day of Premier League football. And I'm so excited to talk about it. But I also have a story I've been holding for the last almost 24 hours.
Oh my God.
So I went for a few pints last night with a college friend, an old college friend. And I got to the bar early, and it's a nice dimly lit bar that serves brilliant Guinness. I won't say where it is because I'm about to name drop a celebrity. So I come in the door and the bar is full. There's only one seat at the bar open. So I go straight to that. And this voice goes, "What the f*** are you wearing?" Like that. And I look over and it's none other than, I think, a hero of yours, certainly a hero of mine in the comedic sense, David Cross.
Oh my God, Tobias Funke?
Tobias Funke, and to quote you, one of history's great losers.
He's one of American television's all-time great losers. Him, Costanza,
they're
all
right
in this category together.
Amazing. And David Cross is a supremely funny comic. And he's there. Now, what am I wearing, I hear you ask? I'm wearing a new bomber jacket that our friends at, our friend and listener, Liverpool supporter Dominic Alcantara got for us. So he just reached out and said, "Would you like something from Alpha Industries?" And we're like, "Yes, please."
I know, it was actually amazing.
Amazing stuff. Yeah. Now, you went with a more simple bomber jacket. I went with a kind of NASA-themed one with a big, kind of big American patch on the side, NASA on the back, NASA space shuttle.
There's a lot going
on
there.
That's what David Cross got. And he goes, "You must get a lot of questions about that." And I actually explained where it came from. And he goes, "Oh, okay." And I said, "Yeah, I do get a lot of questions. I haven't got a lot of questions yet, David. I've just started wearing it." I said, "But, you know, when's the launch? How's basic training going? All that kind of stuff is what I expect to get in the future."
Wow.
So he's just there and he's...
By himself?
Amazing. Yeah, he's just having a pint. He's a pint man. He loves it. He had a big pint of Guinness in front of him. Loves it. So we're just he's there and my friend Emily comes in and you know we exchange a few pleasantries, but we're not in full conversation or anything. And just as he's leaving, I mentioned to him the podcast and you and how Tobias Funke has become a part of the podcast, because when a struggling team hires a new manager, we play this.
There's a new daddy in town. A disciplined daddy.
Did this begin when Xavi took over at Barcelona? Because he was talking about instilling discipline? And I think that was where the first time we used it was for Xavi at Barca.
Yeah, it was. And there's a new daddy in town. And we've used it ever since. We've used it with Ten Hag and more Fuchinan.
This is such an awesome celebrity sighting. So it means did you go your separate ways or did you kind of sit with him and like hang him?
Oh no, he sat. Yeah. So Emily came in. I got her a stool, and we sat and we briefly made fun of my mom because we were talking about Guinness and how my mom when we were kids, if we were in the pub and dad would offer, do you want another one? And she'd go, oh no, they're very filling. And then dad would go, oh, go on, have another one. And she'd go, okay, can you put a bit of blackcurrant cordial in it to make it go down easier? And he was like, oh, okay. So, you know, but it was very nice. And he appears to be very nice, very cool guy. Yeah. And he said to me, I'm glad that our show lives on in the podcast world. And I'm like, your show lives on anyway. It's funny as F.
Yeah, so, I mean, Jason Bateman and Will Arnett host an enormously popular podcast together. Like, it's the rest of development's doing okay in its afterlife, I would say.
And David Cross doing a lot of stand up, it seems, at the moment as well, and doing his own podcast. And he was very cool. Wished us good night and everything. And seems like a very, very nice guy. Wow. So that was cool.
We all know the bar you were at was the Gothic Castle. That's obviously where you were and you didn't want to divulge. Wow, that is amazing that he just unprompted said to you, what the F are you wearing? That is so perfect. Oh my God. What a cool celebrity moment.
Yeah. He just opened up and said it straight away. And then I have seen him do stand up about, like, you know, you're in Brooklyn when XRY talks like this, you know, or dresses like that or whatever. So he does like observational stuff around Brooklyn. So
that jacket might find its way into his next routine.
I really do like the jacket. Like my girlfriend did warn me. She goes, there's a lot going on there, but I do like it. And I do like it.
I think you can pull it off. I think you're okay with it.
I am going to cop some S from when I wear it in Ireland, it's going to be unbelievable. The abuse will be chef's kiss next level. You know, should you be drinking the night before your mission? You know, stuff like that.
Ground control. Yeah. Major JJ.
The nickname will be Major Tom for the rest of the... Or Buzz Aldrin. You know, you're just going to get it.
Love it. Oh, that's fantastic. David Cross. How about that? Oh, what a guy. This is fantastic. What a way to start the pod. I'm so excited about this podcast. We have a lot to get to on this one. Later in the pod, I'm going to go a little bit. I know you rolled your eyes a little bit. I want to do something with the FIFA World Rankings that just came out. I think you'll get on board with it. We'll talk a little bit later on about Corbin Albert, some of the stuff that's gone on with the U.S. Women's National Team as they prepare for the She Believes Cup. Bayer Leverkusen, 40 unbeaten consecutively. Just ridiculous stuff going on there. But JJ, oh my God, we start with, I mean, it's one of the matches of the season. It might be the match of the season so far. Chelsea and Manchester United at Stamford Bridge, 4-3 to Chelsea. A couple thoughts initially struck me as this one was playing out. The first one being, remember on our podcast earlier this week when one of our listeners was upset with you because you had criticized the Manchester City-Arsenal match for being kind of dull, and he was like... And he said something to the effect of, well, what did you want? Bunch of mistakes leading the goals. As this game was playing out, I was thinking, this is a joy watching like some of the ridiculousness of this game and how much fun this has become because of it. Oh my God. Yes. More mistakes, please. This is incredible. Now that is a little bit unfair to the game because there was also some tremendous quality on display.
Yeah. Which, and from guys who haven't been producing quality.
Yeah.
Antony's outside of the foot passing.
I mean, it's amazing that a guy whose season has been defined by his inability to
do anything,
to register an assist or a goal, like he now has the assist of the season. Like the pass was ridiculous.
Yeah.
Incredible. Yep. And the other thing I was thinking was for how much fun that game was and the fact that it might still be the game of the season. Just imagine if this was like Chelsea and United, if this was like, you know,
Fergie Mourinho, Chelsea United, a game like that at this stage, and this would have been, this might have been the greatest game in Premier League history if these teams were like first and third or something like that at this point in the season. It's a little different when, you know, they're sixth and 12th. Now Chelsea are up to what, 10th now after this one, but still, like, still an enormously fun game. Let's go through it.
Yeah, before we do, it's just enormously fun. Like, this was a game I had no intentions of watching. Like, none.
Killing me going back and forth
because it's
like
the most drawn game in the history of the Premier League.
Oh, that's like,
since 1992, yeah. It has the most amount of draws. Like, it's, and I remember some recent.
They had another one.
Yeah, and in the sense of, but when I think of the draw, I don't think excitement central. I think like pure shite, nil-nil, 1-1s kind of stuff, like bad games.
Maybe. I mean, Liverpool and Chelsea have played a fair share of exciting draws over the years. 2-2, I remember. A couple 2-2s.
Right? But I remember the cup finals as well, which were dull as ditch water. The 22 finals were the FA Cup and the League Cup were terrible games, generally. What a game. Yeah. What an unbelievable game. And two managers that sense like they need this. They need something here. And, I mean, where do you want to start?
Well, I mean, we can talk about the big moments. You know, just the way this game began, Chelsea scoring so early on, Conor Gallagher finding the back of the net on a goal that I kind of thought, you know, look, Andre Onana has turned his season around in a big way.
Yes.
He's actually had a really good year. But I thought he could have done maybe a little bit better. It wasn't the hardest shot from Gallagher. It was pretty central.
It wasn't, Andrew. And it was right underneath him, which is often tricky to save, but there wasn't a ton of pace on it. And he got enough of a hand where he's going to be like upset with himself. But it was a nice move, good cutback. Mm-hmm. A lot of bad United defending. Garnacho goes, you know, if Dalot steps into midfield and Garnacho has to cover him, doesn't happen. There was a couple of occasions in both boxes where you're like, how have they two free men at the back post? Like, for example, the Bruno Fernandes header, the equalizer. Like, Hoyland and him are just, queuing up.
Yeah, yeah.
There was a lot of what we'd say in the NFL, busted coverages. Just guys not tracking, not doing their jobs. And a lot of guys put in defensive positions, a.k.a. Anthony, where they really shouldn't be.
Yeah, and after Conor Gallagher's first goal, then Mark Cucurella, like you say, he draws the penalty on Antony. Antony's just wrong side of him.
Oh,
it looks,
I mean,
it's just clunky. You're right. It's a guy who's just not used to being in those positions, and he makes a bit of a mess of it. And Cole Palmer converts, and it's 2-0.
And they're cruising.
We're less than 20 minutes in, and it feels like United are on the brink. Like, this is one of those things where we're a moment away here from this one really, really
descending.
Getting ugly.
Yeah.
And then what happens? Moises Caicedo makes a mistake, and the whole game turns on one moment, an errant pass, an ill-advised pass, and it sends Garnacho on his way. Granted, Garnacho still has some work to do, and De Sassi is bearing down on him and making it difficult. And, you know, Garnacho's kind of falling down as he gets the shot off, and it's really well placed. But Caicedo, I don't know. I watch him sometimes, and I think he's really good. Obviously, we watched him last year. We thought he was brilliant. He has just—it's been a weird season for him at Chelsea. He's had a hard time adjusting. He's had some of these kind of brainless moments, and this was a bad one. And it brought United right back into the game. They score there. Sure enough, just what was it? A little under 4 minutes later, brilliant ball from Dalot back post. And, you know, I know you say that. You know, there's two guys there. I thought Hoyland did a pretty good job
leaving it.
Kind of not only leaving it, but he's kind of screening. I think it's Badiashile to make sure that, you know, Badiashile is not going to be able to get through Hoyland, and it kind of presents Fernandez with a clean attempt on goal and the header. It's perfect. He plays it across the face of goal, well placed. It's, you know, a really nice header from Bruno Fernandes as well. And just like that, this game that it felt like was on the brink of becoming just a total snooze fest, Chelsea rolling to a huge win. It's 2-2 as we're heading into halftime. Blink of an eye stuff, and you're thinking, here we go. We're on our way for what's going to be a phenomenal second half.
But even within that, you know, Conor Gallagher has the chance right before halftime, and he whacks one off the base of the post. Like, so, you know, it's a brilliant game, but you know, the commentary afterwards is correct. Why is it a brilliant game? Because there is no control by either side. Total inability to keep the ball for extended periods, particularly from United, and a kind of a frantic, chaotic nature. It reminded me of what really made the Premier League the Premier League, which was those mid-90s games, which were end-to-end basketball-style games, mm-hmm. and which we considered at the time the height of entertainment. And then Blackburn Rovers or Manchester United would go into Europe and get pumped by some, like, IFK Gothenburg or some. And you're like, how is this happening? And then you say, oh, yeah, they keep the ball, don't they? They keep it, they don't let you have it, and they pass through you. And so this was a real throwback game for me.
This was end-to-end. It was wide open. Didn't really feel like there were midfields. Like, the game just was like final third, final third, final third, back and forth, pinballing. And then, like you said, we mentioned it before, United complete what felt like a completion of their comeback as Garnacho gets a second on, I mean, it was a moment that Antony desperately needed. Just plays in an incredible cross using kind of the outside of his foot, rounds a couple Chelsea defenders with the pass, and Garnacho lets it bounce and then gets ahead to it and has just enough juice to get over the line. And United in front, and it's feeling like they're on their way to an kind of another one of these weird United victories where,
yeah,
did they play well enough? I guess so. It's highly dramatic, but there was still time left.
There was too much time, and there was too much time for United to not defend properly, essentially. Now, the penalty. Dallow on, who was it, Andrew?
I don't remember.
It doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
So, Dallow is wrong side. He gets beaten too easily, and then he's flailing and he falls over. Now, there's not a ton of contact.
Was it Chukwuemeka or Medweke? Yeah. I think it was Medweke.
Yeah, one way or the other, it doesn't really matter. Because Dallow is falling, and I feel for him because he's out of control. And the referee, basically what you're looking at here is the referee thinks it's a penalty on the field. And he's just like, he needs something to give him, oh God, no, I'm totally wrong. And there's not enough there to say, well, that's a complete error.
And I know some United fans seemed a little frustrated that maybe there wasn't definitive proof that there was a penalty. I am absolutely fine with this application of VAR. It's a penalty. Yeah. Penalty's been called on the field. We're watching the replays. Okay, maybe we can't definitively tell that there is one, but there's also no proof to definitively tell us that there isn't. And so we don't have to sit here forever. We go with the call on the field. I think we all have to be fine with that.
Oh no, I'm okay with it. And look at, I mean, it's not like it was some kind of exaggerated dive or he's gone over under simulation. Like, something's brought him down. We just can't definitively say how it's come about.
By the way, the greatest evidence was that Dallow didn't argue for even a second.
Not even a little bit. Not even a little bit. He knows. But like, if you're a defender, he's got the other side of me. I'm chasing back and I fall and he goes down. I'm banged to rights here.
Kind of okay with the attacker getting the benefit of the doubt in a situation like that.
No problem. No problem with it. And again, Cole Palmer opening up his body. So there's one thing for goalkeepers that David Seaman used to talk about on penalties. What do you do? And he said, I wait as long as I can, and then I look at the standing foot of the attacker. If the toe standing foot of the attacker usually denotes which side the ball is going to go. So the plant foot, not the striking foot. And Cole Palmer's so good at it, he does him. His standing foot is going to the keeper's right, hits it to the keeper's left. It's a superb penalty. And it's amazing Chelsea are coming out of this season with a story like him. And I wonder if the financials are as bad as they say they are, will they even be able to hold on to him? I mean that now. If things are as dire, and we're hearing, I mean, I was reading a few tweets by Michael Calley, who's breaking down some of the Chelsea financials about how much they're going to have to sell before they can buy in again. And then just the whole balance in the books operation. I mean, he is their biggest asset right now. He's fabulous. Absolutely fabulous. And a Manchester United supporter as a lad, goes to Man City. terrible haircut as well. Like, I mean, people need to sit down with him and Phil Foden. You are the rising stars. You can get better haircuts.
Yeah, I
don't understand what's happening here. I know, and you know me, I've had some horrendous ones.
It takes one to know one.
Exactly. I can pick them out. So, penalty rolls in. But I'm expecting Ten Hag to be, doing as usual, his grunts and noises, but for him to be happy about a point. Not happy, but we should have won the game. There's something to take away. But the cruelest of... Actually, I take that back. Is it a cruel blow if it's completely self-inflicted?
Yeah, it is, because it's in the 101st minute of game. Like, it is, and it's a massive deflection. Let's go back. I mean, this is one of the moments of the season. Let's go back and hear John Champion and his call of it for NBC.
Fernandez, seconds ticking away. Cole Palmer deflected it in, and Chelsea have won it with just about the final kick.
God, what a moment! What a moment! Something that was funny about it to me. So there's a bunch of still shots, JJ. I wonder if this is what you're referring to when you talk about the self-inflicted nature of it. There's some still shots of right before the corner is taken, and it shows like 8 United defenders kind of all in a tightly packed area sort of in front of goal. And then it shows Cole Palmer by himself on the edge of the box. Like, we all saw when the ball was rolled to him, it was kind of like, where is anyone? He had all day. And I think in the picture, 3 of the defenders for United are all pointing at Cole Palmer, presumably all saying, "Someone mark him." And JJ, seeing that, it made me think of one of my favorite scenes from Curb Your Enthusiasm, when there's an argument going on at a dinner table, and one of the guys in the argument gets really, he's getting very animated and upset, and his hands are going, and he knocks over, a glass of wine, and it goes all over Larry and all over his face. And Larry has this exchange with his mother-in-law right after it happens.
I'm a survivor.
I'm a survivor.
I'm a survivor.
I'm a survivor.
Somebody get a sponge.
I don't understand. Why don't you get a sponge?
I think about this all the time.
Yeah.
Somebody get a sponge. Why don't you get the sponge? You got 3 United defenders all screaming, "Someone go get Cole Palmer." Why don't you do it?
Exactly.
What do you guys take the initiative here?
And Bruno Fernandes spots it. He's one of the pointers, and he trundles across, and it's just too half-hearted. Uh-huh. You got to sprint out there and close him down. I don't know who was... Oh, so it wasn't... Was that game... Was that... That game wasn't... I wonder, was it on Sky? I don't know. But I don't know. I'll see tomorrow who was on the panel for Sky. But imagine if Roy Keane was on the panel for that.
Oh, he won't like that one bit.
Oh, my God. That would be the definition of something that would drive him absolutely insane. And I'm sorry. Rob Dawson of ESPN, who covers United for them, described it as pathetic. Mm-hmm. That is the word for it. It is pathetic. And so Ten Hag, after the game, was talking about resiliency. We are resilient. He kept saying that. You can see how we came back. But this is a case in point about how you aren't resilient. He was also asked by, I'm sorry, but it was TNT. I don't know who the post-match interviewer is, but she was brilliant. And I will post the clip. And she goes to Ten Hag about the record number of shots. You're conceding like a huge number of shots every game.
I think in this game, it was 28 shots for Chelsea, 10 on target, I believe.
I mean, they literally have conceded Premier League shots faced in 2024, they're top of the table. There's Manchester United, then there's Brentford, Sheffield United, West Ham, Luton and Burnley.
I mean, that's like, not the company you want to be keeping.
Come on. So, but he goes, the usual. Ah. And then, yes, but, Dutch. And then he finishes with, I can't do anything with this stat. Like, are you serious? Like, you know, I think United lead the top 5 leagues in Europe in this. Not just the Premier League, in Europe. This is an example of it. It cannot be that easy to get shots on target.
Yeah.
And, he said, we do have a good defence. We do have a good goalkeeper. How?
Well, you better have a good goalkeeper if you're going to concede shots.
I'm happy to concede. I'm happy to concede that Onana is a good goalkeeper. Don't tell me about the rest, And it was interesting listening to United fans online, because one of them was he's a data analyst from Northwestern, wherever the college, Keyes Van Hemmen. and he does a podcast, Devil's in the Detail or something like that. And he was like rebuttal from, you know, from United fans who were like, well, we were missing X or Y, you know, of our defenders. We were missing our center halves, our starting center halves and blah, blah, blah. And he goes, yeah, but we're not any good when we have them either. And that's the thing, man. This is not good. It's not getting better. It's chaos. There's no plan. I will say this. Garnacho, again tonight, carried the team in terms of literally carrying the ball, making runs, closing people down. I think they've got a player in Kobbie Mainoo. It's too soon for him, though, like, to be leading a side, definitely. And the aforementioned Onana. But, like, after that, you're struggling. And then you see, again, people quote-tweeting what Rashford said in the Athletic article a couple of weeks ago, which was, don't question my commitment to Manchester United. And then the video comes of when he's introduced into the game and him, what would you call it? Would you even call it pressing? What would you call it?
No, it's not. It's kind of light jogging.
Does he get close to the ball? Does he
not
get close
really.
To,
not really.
Does it look, it doesn't look good.
There's something off there. I don't know. I mean, look, maybe here's the thing. Maybe a lot of guys, you could identify individual moments where attackers are moving like that. Like, it's hard to take one clip and judge. The problem is he's put together a little bit of a body of work similar to that this season that you kind of can now use against him. I don't know. I'm not sure. It's one of those games for United. I say every year for teams that are struggling, having seasons where they're underachieving, like United are, there's always one game that breaks you as a fan. And the fact that for this to come right on the heels of the Brentford game where they conceded in the 99th minute to draw, to then come right around to this, you think you've got it won and you give up a goal in the 100th and 101st minutes, the latest game-winning goal in Premier League history for Cole Palmer. I think this broke United fans, I would say, tonight. This is the one that broke them.
I think so.
Because any illusions that there could be competing for top four, I think end tonight. By the way, I'm not convinced that when it's all said and done, remember, I've said that Chelsea have had a weird season. Like, you know, the XG table and their expected points do not align with where they are in the actual table. I'm not convinced that by the time this is over, like, United could be behind Chelsea when this is, those teams could still, there's time for them to swap places. I think Chelsea are 5 points back, and do they have a match at hand as well?
Yeah.
I'll double check.
That would be historic. You're going back to the 70s for such a poor United finish of a domestic season. I think it's over for Ten Hag, Andrew.
I'm not there yet.
I'm there. I think he came out, and again, it's a Rob Dawson piece. You can read it on ESPN. He quoted as saying he hopes that Big Sir Jim Ratcliffe and Ineos don't interrupt the progress his team is making. This was pre-match. Mm-hmm. Progress. You know, they're watching that tonight. And what, like, again, do they have the football people in place to recognize this is crazy stuff? This is not sustainable. Or there's surely no one from Dave Brailsford to anybody at Ineos that thinks this is good. There couldn't be. Or that it's trending in any way that suggests it's going to get better. It might be dependent on money. It might, hardly money, but maybe. It will be dependent on who's available. Maybe United will want to get in on some of the talk that's going around some managers in Europe. But I can't see him being here next August. I think he's done in May. I really do. I think they'll let him see out the season. It's been a huge disappointment. The signings largely have not worked. Some through just being not up to it. Amrabat, Anthony, Casemiro is just too old. And then some through just kind of like injury. Lissandro.
Yeah. One of those I wanted to ask you about, and then we'll move off of this. Mason Mount. So he came on for United. He was one of those big signings. $60 million. We probably shouldn't be surprised by anything when it comes to fan reaction and things like that. But I'll ask the question anyway. He was, I mean, he came to Chelsea when he was 12. He came through Cobham. He's a Chelsea guy. Obviously he left and didn't leave. The terms of which he left under are murky at best.
He didn't want to go.
So there's question there. And I'll get to that in a sec, but he was booed pretty relentlessly throughout.
There was a guy who had a shirt with his number on it and it said Judas on it.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe I guess I was a little bit taken aback by it. Maybe I shouldn't be. So I did kind of go back to read up on this and see, like, okay, well, why the anger towards him? So ahead of this game, I'm reading from Football London. Ahead of the game with Chelsea, Erik ten Hag said, I don't think they, Chelsea, wanted to sell him. They wanted to keep him and offered him a new contract many times, but he wanted to make this step. So that was what ten Hag said. So there's more, though. Football London understands Mount wanted to stay, but when contract offers were taken away, he came to the conclusion that he wasn't in Chelsea's plans moving forward. Once the World Cup was over with England going out in the quarterfinal stage to France, meetings then started taking place again between Mount and Chelsea, but with a new look transfer team with the likes of Paul Wistonley, Joe Shields, and Christopher Vivell in place, there was slightly different structure to how the club were operating behind the scenes, with Boley and Egbali taking somewhat of a step back from the day-to-day stuff. Mount and his entourage thought they were close to an agreement and extending the deal, but when he arrived back from the World Cup, the offer was no longer on the table. Things at this point looked dead until the January transfer window came around, and there was another big development. On multiple occasions between the end of January and the start of February, Chelsea wanted to extend Mount and see his salary increase. However, that was not of interest to the player signing a one-year deal. Doesn't sound like Chelsea were willing to go beyond that. So there's murkiness here. Chelsea fans, I mean, if all of this is to be believed, Chelsea fans could say, well, the club wanted him, and he's a Chelsea guy. He chose to leave. Well, Mount could then come back and say, they were only offering me a one-year deal. I wanted more security than that long-term. So I don't know who's in the wrong here. I don't know if either are really in the wrong. Maybe it's not an issue of right and wrong. But it might have just been time for Mount to move on and go somewhere different. I don't know. But I do know that the reception to him was noticeable in vitriol.
I mean, look, is there anything from Chelsea supporters that should really surprise me? They can be a strange and capricious fan base. But I don't think he deserved it. I don't think he deserved it at all, to be honest with you. Is it possible he looked a little bit shocked by it all?
He might have been.
No, he didn't do anything wrong. It's not like he sat out training, refused to train, forced his way out. I mean, certainly not an Anthony Gordon Everton situation, where the minute Newcastle came in, Gordon couldn't wait to get out the door.
By the way, the other part of this, which I was thinking about a little bit, like the way Richarlison left Everton. You know, Everton fans weren't happy about it, but then we come to find out later, Everton needed him to leave. They needed to recoup that money. They were in desperate need of it. Mount, you know, the thing we always say, especially about Chelsea, the academy guys, the players who came from Chelsea, like, those are the players who can bring you back the most money. Because clubs keep all of that. They got $60 million for Mason Mount. That's a pretty good sum. Mm-hmm. For a club that are in grave danger, it seems, of falling afoul of some kind of PSR violation. So I don't know. Maybe we'll come to find out a year from now that, you know, Mason Mount saved them in some way from falling even deeper into a financial hole.
And he had to go in that quarter.
Who knows? I mean, $60 million is a lot of money to get back for an academy player. So we'll see. But God, what a game. Really, really
fun. What a fun night.
Yeah, 4-3. Chelsea heaping some woe on Manchester United, and we'll see. Now, like I said, it is a 5-point difference between the two of them, and Chelsea do have a match at hand, so still time left in this season for maybe those two to swap spots.
You know, you do have Liverpool on Sunday.
Yeah.
But yeah, we'll talk more about that.
That was what a buddy of mine, Berenson, texted me. He said it's going to take a while to get over this one, and I said, well, beat Liverpool this weekend, you'll get over it pretty quick. That is the opportunity that awaits them. Sure. Speaking of Liverpool, JJ, they faced Sheffield United today, and what should have been just a la-di-da, Sheffield United, blah, blah, blah. Okay, 3 points. Nope, wasn't quite like that. Liverpool did take the lead early on a on just such a Darwin Nunez moment. Just a moment of limbs and chaos and hustle and aggression.
He hustled the ball into the net. He energized the ball into the net. His mere presence, his mere chaotic energy put the ball into the net. Yeah, he pressed the goalkeeper, jumps, karate kicks it into the net. Basically, ball. It's poor from the goalkeeper, obviously, but still, it's great passing from Darwin. And I went to the Munro to watch it. And the bar, again, considering it's, you know, it's a weekday, it's pretty full bar. Interesting thing was, I'm walking by Adam, who was a psychotic Liverpool fan, and I hear him saying, you know, we got a goal now. It's time to build up the goal difference, try and get as many as we can in this game. And I'm the same lackadaisical. I sit down where I can see the two TVs, so I can see the start of the United game and watch the Liverpool game. And I'm like away in La La Land, and the camera pans to the sideline to Klopp, and I see the TNT presenter, Laura Woods, behind Klopp. And she's got a hood on, but she's also kind of got a dress jacket. So I'm daydreaming. I'm like, is the hood attached to the jacket, or is she wearing a hoodie underneath the jacket?
What are you talking about?
Yeah, exactly. My mind is everywhere else. I'm not thinking of anything. And I'm like, why are they sitting there? They're almost on the Liverpool bench. That's strange. I'm just taking it for granted. The next thing, you could just feel the kind of uneasiness creeping in into the room, into the bar. Sheffield United just start to get on the front foot the tiniest little bit, and Liverpool are, you know, they're giving away passes cheap, there's no fluidity. And the next thing you know, ball to the back post. Was it Brereton Diaz gets connection, and it hits off Conor Bradley, and, you know, takes a wicked angle of a deflection and goes underneath Kevin Kelleher. And the next thing you're like, oh, bloody hell, it's 1-1. And suddenly things become really, really difficult. And Klopp makes substitutions again, and the substitutions do help. But he subs Salah. And I'm like, you need a goal here, and you're taking off Salah. And Salah was not happy. Now, look, it was probably planned that he's come off. He's over a month back from that injury that he had. But like, he's still, you know, they're thinking about Sunday, obviously. There's games coming. But it was ballsy to take him off, and it was completely vindicated. And then we saw one of the great strikes of the season from Alexis McAllister, who continues to, like, I know watching Brighton, we thought he was good. He's a World Cup winner with Argentina. We knew he was good. He has been brilliant for Liverpool this season.
Yeah.
In two positions. One, when there was a need to have a deeper lying midfielder, he slotted in there. Is it his ideal position? No, but he was very, very good. And now in a more advanced position further up the field, getting on the end of things, creating against Nottingham Forest, that dink into the box for another cathartic goal, another big explosion of limbs from the away end at the City Ground, Darwin Nunez. And then this, just the clean, such a beautiful hit. And shades of Gerard.
Oh, your beauty.
Yeah, it had a little bit of
a lot
end.
Like that one.
Yeah, it did feel a lot like that. And then we're off into the crowd. And then you're like, just, okay, get the third. And a guy who needs it, really needs it, although has 14 goals in all competitions, or 15 goals in all competitions now, but there's the perception that he's not settling in. And even McAllister afterwards mentioned it. So Gakpo's beside McAllister, and McAllister goes, I'm so happy for this guy who's been trying and working so hard, and he deserved that goal. So there's certainly a sense within the team that Gakpo was maybe not getting his just rewards, and the header, and it's 3-1. And puts a gloss on a not great performance, but a game Liverpool still deserved to win, but you know what football's like. Deserve means nothing.
Oh, yeah. Probably, I mean, I would say the game was probably more tense than the scoreline might indicate. Years from now, you'll look at that. Oh, 3-1 Sheffield United. Huh,
no.
Okay. No, it was, there was a lot. I mean, there was, you could feel the relief, I think. I mean, yeah, there was joy, but when that McAllister blast went in, it was like, okay, we're still in this title race.
Me and you had a mutual friend at the game. Burke was there, our friend Burke. And he texted me, he said, like, the relief.
Yeah.
The release of tension when that went in. And you could tell in the celebrations how conscious they are of just, you know, they should be winning this game. Don't mess this up. But it was, you know, Sheffield United are definitely the last couple of weeks more resilient. They're, you know, they're certainly giving it a go, but Liverpool had too much quality in the end. And yeah. And what could have been a disastrous result was salvaged.
But it is a huge win for Liverpool. They remain atop the table, 2 points ahead of Arsenal and 3 points ahead of Manchester City. City, in one of the marquee matches of this midweek slate of fixtures, faced Aston Villa on Wednesday. And it was tight for a little bit. It was 1-1. Credit to Villa after the early blow against them. A nice goal from Rodri, who's yes. just one of the he's in the running for player of the season. I can't say enough things about that guy.
I think John Bruin tweeted exactly that. I think he said he's player of the year.
He does everything just so incredibly well. Yeah. But, you know, with Ollie Watkins not playing, it's Duran who's filling in for him and scores. I mean, it's a really nice move, kind of back to front. Villa just sort of carved through Manchester
Lovely
City.
Lovely one, too.
Yeah, not something you see all that often. They zip right through them. But then the Phil Foden show began. We're talking about players of the season. This might be his crowning performance on his player of the season campaign. He said,
I mean, everything went right. The free kick goes in because, in fairness, Villa just opened a gap in front of Robin Olsen. Like there wasn't
Zaniolo on that. So he detaches from the wall. And Foden's shot, I mean, much to his luck, like Foden's shot perfectly finds that seam
sure.
that he vacated. But I wondered afterwards. So Zaniolo, that happens. The ball goes in, and then you look at Zaniolo, and he's got his arms out kind of looking around as if to say, what happened? I always wonder, how does that guy feel later on when he goes back and watches the film?
Well, he instantly went into hot dog man in hot dog car mode that's crashed into the building.
But it's like, what happened here? What happened? You happened.
Yeah,
you are what happened.
But, I mean, professional footballers all my life, when something goes wrong, some of them put their head in their hands, and others just kind of, they're like
looking for someone, praying that there's someone else to blame.
Yeah, 100%. Absolutely.
Phil Foden said afterwards, obviously, I'm just loving my football at the moment. I'm just playing with a smile on my face. I'm trying to help the team because I know I'm capable of scoring goals, and I know today I showed that, so I'm delighted. That's a kind of a line, JJ, unique to the sport. Obviously,
smile on the face.
I'm just loving my football at the moment. I've never heard LeBron say after a game, I'm just loving my basketball right now. You only hear people say that in this sport. I'm loving he's loving his football right
and
now.
And also, I think playing the game with a smile on my face is a pure football cliche. Yeah. Because when a new manager comes in, what's his first job? Well, his first job is to put a smile back in the fans' faces, you know, get to the training ground, lift everyone, you know, like he's a stand-up comedian.
Phil Foden has turned into, I mean, you could see this building over the last couple of years. He was a brilliant, you could tell he was a huge talent at, you know, 19 years of age, but he's blossomed. He's 23 now. He's hitting his prime. I think he might be the front runner for player of the season. I don't know what the official odds are, but he just does everything so well. I mean, he's a fantastic dribbler. His shot, you know, the third goal that he scored. I mean, what a shot as he's falling down. You know, his passing ability is top notch. He is a complete player. I'm so impressed with him. And I do think, I mean, in a season that's been brilliant for him, this performance might have gone to the top of the list. That game was 1-1. They're in this intense battle right now for the title. And Foden comes up with a showing like that with Haaland and De Bruyne on the bench. They needed this from him. And he showed he's ready to be that guy. You know, City have had a lot of that guys over the years, and he's showing I'm one of them.
Yeah. And I mean, for the people who suggested he's going to have to leave, like only a few years ago when he wasn't consistently playing, you know, they were saying, well, he's got to leave. Guardiola's never, where is he going to fit in here? You know, Grealish lands, you know, how's he got, like his performances have been brilliant.
This is the weird thing about City, though. You know, maybe next year Grealish will be the one doing this and Foden will be like, you know, part-time player. That's the weirdness of this team. By the way, I don't think that's going to happen. I think Foden is legit and here to stay.
But yeah, I think so too.
City's weird like that.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, how many times have we told Bernardo Silva he's on the way, he's gone. Forget about him. I note Jack Grealish's start.
Mm-hmm.
I note that. I also, I was supposed to save the tweet, but I can't find it, where people are like, someone was just kind of saying that the whole thing that I always do about, you know, wanting the old Grealish back, you know. But it's very unlikely, because the old Grealish at Villa had acres of space. Villa were usually the ones under the cosh, and when they'd break, he'd be running into green grass. And now he's playing against two banks of four or five defenders and six in front, whatever, or five and five or whatever it is. Like, it's a different kind of thing. So, but I wonder if Guardiola realized after the 30 minutes he got against Arsenal, and I know he is returning from injuries in that. I wondered if he, you know, and the bollocking he gave him at the end of the game, if he felt compelled to play him as well and give him some minutes. But yeah, so that was easy. Very easy, yeah. Considering the trouble Villa gave City earlier on in the season. That was pretty easy.
Not such a bad thing to beat the team who's currently in fourth while Kyle Walker and Ederson are hurt and Haaland, De Bruyne and John Stones are all bench. Not so bad.
This is what we talk about when people like me just have this belief, fear, premonition of City carrying off the trophy again. It's that kind of performance that makes you worry.
Staying in the title race, Arsenal, not too much difficulty with Luton Town. Got a couple goals in the first half. That was all they needed.
They weren't great. I saw bits and pieces. They weren't great, but they didn't need to be really. It was straightforward stuff.
I mean, you know, we talk about City. Arsenal had a lot of squad rotation in this one, too. I mean, look at, I think it was the first goal. You know, it's Emile Smith Rowe that makes it happen. You kind of have a double take for a second. It's like, wait, who did that?
Yeah.
And then it's a brilliant finish from Odegaard. Oh, that was such a clean strike of the ball as he kind of swipes across it with his left foot. Oh, I love that guy. He's a great player.
He really is quality.
But yeah, I think it was five players that Arsenal rotated. So, you know, they're competing in the Champions League. They got Bayern Munich. So they're trying to win this title. So they're going to have to do that. And it's encouraging. That's the right moment to do it. I mean, you can't take anybody for granted. Look, Liverpool had a lot of trouble with Sheffield United, but it's smart from Arteta. I think you got Luton Town, you got them at home. You know, you think my team should be able to handle this. We got Champions League stuff on the horizon. We're in this title race. Now's the time to see what I got with some of these other guys off the bench. And a lot of them responded. So solid win for Arsenal. Charlie Eccleshare, JJ, posted on Twitter, excluding games against each other, the Premier League's top three have dropped a combined 2 points in 2024. I mean, this confirms what we've known since probably the first couple months of the season. This is a three-team league this year. You got three of the best teams in Europe are in this league, and they are battling it out, and they don't lose. They hardly ever drop points unless, like he says, they're playing each other. This is a spectacular title race. And right now, like I said, it's Liverpool who are on top by 2 points above Arsenal, who are 1 point ahead of Manchester City. 3 points separating three teams. Even the goal difference is pretty tight. Arsenal plus 48, Liverpool plus 42, City plus 38. It's going to be, I think that we're going to see this all the way through. I have no idea. This is brilliant stuff. Let's see a couple other things quickly.
Yeah.
Zip through here. West Ham and Spurs, London Derby finishes all level at London Stadium. Tottenham, they scored early, a nice goal, very Ange kind of goal. Destiny Udogi pushing play forward against the Timo Werner, who as a creator has done great. And Brennan Johnson finishes it off, who's had a great second half to the season. They're up 1-0 in the first couple minutes. You think, okay, this could, maybe they're on their way here to a big performance. But JJ, it's one of the most unexpected Achilles heels to emerge this season. Tottenham can't defend corners.
No.
They cannot do it. It cost them in the FA Cup. It's why they went out to Manchester City. And potentially we've seen it now on a few occasions. What was it? Wolves, Everton, and now this against West Ham. Teams are overloading the box. They're putting guys on Vicario. He doesn't know how to deal with it. Yves Bissouma wasn't sure who he should be marking. Should I try to help my goalkeeper and try to get Mikel Antonio off of him, or should I be marking Kurt Zuma? He kind of does neither. Zuma is able to score. I mean, it's knocked them out of a cup, and it could be the thing that knocks them out of being able to qualify for the Champions League. This was, you know, when you're looking at a team before a season, you're thinking, okay, what are the potential weak spots here? Well, they're going to attack like crazy. Maybe they'll be vulnerable in the back. No, it's defending effing corners. That's it. Like, it's become, if the season goes the wrong direction for them, it's the thing you'll point at as to where this went wrong. And by the way, they're also bad on their own set pieces. I mean, you look at what Arsenal are doing on set pieces. They're riding it to a possible title. Tottenham have got to do better. This is unacceptable in this day and age in this sport where teams are devoting so much resources and money to perfecting that part of the game. You can't be this bad on defending them and on scoring your own. It is such a weakness for them, and the whole league sees it. They're all exploiting it. Michael Richards talked about it on Match of the Day. He said, for all the great work that they do, they really need to polish up on them corners. I think it's four of the last 11 they've conceded from corners. Totally inexcusable.
Yeah.
Totally inexcusable.
Ange had a sunny disposition after the game, or sunny outlook, saying that he sees enough in this team to realize that they're going in the right direction. But
I still think that's true.
Yeah. And his usual friend, we're a work in progress. One of the works should be set pieces for and against. Like those, Graham Taylor, the late Graham Taylor was a guy who just like absolutely hammered home those fundamentals.
Yeah.
You know, your restarts have to be set pieces, corner kicks, throw-ins, all that have to be really good. So,
yeah. So 1-1, I guess with Villa losing and United losing, in the end, maybe it's not a terrible point for Spurs, but you know, it's a game that
right in there,
beating.
Andrew, right in there. They're breathing down the neck of Villa. It's
tight race. It's gonna be That'll be a fun one too. Let's see, Everton. They continue to not win, but in this case, I would say they do snatch a valuable point late at Newcastle.
This was a good point. Newcastle should have won the game. There was a brilliant performance in goal from Jordan Pickford, who made some fantastic saves.
Yeah.
Mikulenko, a header off the line. Newcastle should have been out of sight dead. I think they had 20 shots, 6 on target. They were comfortably the better side. Everton did have their moments, but I think there was a Dwight McNeil, I think it was him, hit the post. But they weren't. Newcastle should have won the game. And yet they did not. Newcastle gave away a dreadful penalty. And Dominic Calvert-Lewin gets it done. It's not the best penalty in the world. Dubravka got a bit of a hand on it, but it's powerful enough to go in. And one thing I love about Newcastle, I actually do love that stadium, but they put the away fans high up behind one of the goals in one of the towering parts of the new stand that goes around in the L shape almost. And the fans are way up there. So when they pop off, it's almost like they're in a different district. Different part of town, and the players have to crane their necks to see them, and so the celebrations are right underneath. I think it's a really good point for Everton, to be honest. I think they should have been beaten, and they weren't, and it kind of takes the wind out of Newcastle after their big win over comeback win against West Ham at the weekend. So I would say a good result. And Alexander Isak, though, his goal, it just kind of, like, he's so tall, he's so strong and athletic, but like tall players, you don't feel like they should move in that fashion. But he's whipped in from the left, from the left hand side, cut in on the right, and just curls one home. Strength and power and skill, very, very good, very good boy. I think if you can keep him fit, like he's an excellent center forward.
Yeah,
but that's it.
There you go. Got anything else on the midweek stuff?
New. And if I miss anything, there's another podcast next week.
Exactly. Just keep on coming. I'll tell you what, we'll go ahead. We'll take a break. We still got a lot to do on the other side here. Like I said, a little bit of some FIFA stuff that I think you might find interesting. Bayer Leverkusen, U.S. Women's National Team. Still a lot to do here on Caught Offside. Don't go anywhere.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Oh, back now on Caught Offside here. Looking ahead to this Monday, JJ. So I don't know if this is a thing that's come into your radar, but although you are Mr. NASA, but so the great North American eclipse, I guess, is what this is being referred to as. There's going to be a solar eclipse on Monday.
Yeah.
And it's
fully into it.
You're fully into it. Okay. Well, then you'll find some of this interesting. So yeah, like I also find these things interesting. Like I think it's cool that this is going to happen. It's not the first eclipse I've been alive for. I think this has happened many times. However, the part of this that I was not prepared for, and I wonder what you make of this. So we got a message from the superintendent of our school district yesterday. Right. And in the message, the entire email, by the way, the superintendent, it's not like he sends weekly updates. Here's what's going on in the school. Like, this doesn't usually happen. So
Super Nintendo Charmers.
So to get an email from the superintendent is immediately noticeable. It's entirely about the eclipse. And it kind of starts out by saying, letting everyone know there will still be school on Monday. What? I'm sorry, that was on the table? What's going on? So this it talks about how there will still be school on Monday, but emergency dismissal protocols are going to be in place, which means no public no bus transportation. All the parents have to go to the school and pick up their kids to bring them home.
What kind of emergency is he envisioning here?
What's help me, JJ? What's going on? Well, I don't understand.
He could be a Satan. He could be a Satanist.
So that's probably it.
He
Thank
could
you for
believe
your help.
That this is ushering in, a piece of scripture. Well, there's more scripture to come later in the pod, but that is going to usher in some kind of prophecy.
Yeah.
The horsemen of the apocalypse or something. I don't know. I mean,
I don't understand.
The problem is that there was a precedent set for dummies by our previous president during a solar eclipse, in which everybody was warned, don't look at it. He trundles out, waddles out onto the balcony with the first lady, no glasses or nothing, looks directly at it, points at it, then looks at it, then smiles and puts his thumbs up. Yeah.
What have you? Someone bring me my binoculars.
Bring me my binoculars. Now my eyes have the greatest eyes. People are saying Ken there. He knows he's my optician. I got great eyes, Ken. That's right. Oh, Ken doesn't want to talk about it. But
I will say, though, this is an important moment to give that PSA, because I think a lot of people
don't stare at it. Definitely don't do that.
Do not. And I was reading about why. So, like, people are tricked essentially into thinking that they can look at it because suddenly the sun isn't as bright. Oh, the moon's blocking the sun, so its rays aren't hitting me. That's not true. The sun continues to emit all of its normal rays, but because it's not as bright, people think that they can look at it. And now the normal defenses that your body has in place to protect you in these situations, which is primarily blinking, those defenses are all nullified. You don't blink. It's the same way as if somebody duct taped your eyes open on a normal sunny day and forced you to look directly at the sun. The harmful effects are exactly the same. So don't do it. Don't look directly at the sun. We can't stress that enough.
I cannot say be stronger on the point that on this and some other issues, our former commander-in-chief got it wrong. Don't look at the sun. By the way, as a serious PSA, Brooklyn Public Library are distributing solar eclipse glasses.
Yeah.
So you can be safe in enjoying the eclipse. I mean, unless it is actually some kind of satanic ritual, then we're screwed.
I was wondering if the harmful effect, like, could that be a reason why the school is being so careful with this and that they're afraid of some kind of lawsuit? But, like, just keep the kids indoors. Or if it's, like, during transportation. They already said, I think, they're giving out those kinds of eclipse glasses to all the kids. I don't know. Is this just, like, out of a lawsuit? They're covering themselves? I don't know.
Sometimes I feel like, and I don't like the term nanny state, but I do feel like now with just like everything, we are very much a litigious society. And if a child were to look at the sun and cause some retina damage, that the school would be
held
could
liable?
Be
how
held liable because they never said not to do. I don't.
Well, but
know
they it. But all, tell all your teachers to let tell the kids like this is how we're going to educate them. I don't know. I don't get it. I asked a lot of my friends who are smarter than you and me, and they didn't seem to understand it either. I don't know. Now, I don't mean to act like I'm not excited for this thing. I think it'll be cool. I just don't. There's a bit of a fervor over this particular eclipse that I'm a little bit surprised by. We are not in the path of totality, as it's called, JJ. We're close, so we will have a partial eclipse. But
look at the way you delivered that, like a newsreader.
Some of the path of
totality.
The main, like the biggest
the corridor
cities,
of uncertainty.
The biggest cities that will be in the path of totality: Dallas, Indianapolis, Cleveland. Those are some of the notable U.S.
Good
cities.
Good for Cleveland, huh?
Yeah, my good thoughts exactly. I thought the That's same thing when I saw them.
You know what?
Good for them.
Good for them.
So there you go, JJ.
What if the river goes on fire again?
So yeah, just be safe, everyone. Don't be stupid with this. Like, right. Don't look at the sun, even if you think that it's not as shiny as normal.
Don't look at the sun. It's a bad idea. I know a guy who did it one time. His name was Bonald.
Let's see some news and notes from things happening around the world. I wanted to mention. Look, I don't know how seriously I take this, but
I saw this on the rundown, I was.
I felt you rolling your eyes. I knew it. I knew it. But it's because I have. I just want to ask some questions to you.
Okay.
So the latest FIFA World Rankings have been released. The U.S. are up to 11th in the world now.
Come on.
The U.S. are 11th.
I immediately checked for Germany.
Germany
are in 16th place.
So this is what I want to do, JJ. I've prepared an activity. I've prepared an activity for us because I still believe that the FIFA World Rankings, which no one really cares about, aside from the fact that they are used for, you know, for different pots and things, and like it is kind of important. I still think that it would be so much more fun and people would look forward to the releasing of the rankings so much more if there was some kind of panel similar to like what you have in college football and college basketball, where it's like actually subjective rather than this weird point system that they use for different matches. I think it would be more fun to have it done like that. And so I'm wondering if that was the case and this was subjective based on panelists, where would the U.S. actually be? They're 11th right now. And so I have the teams that are below them up to 25th. And I'm going to read them one by one, and I want you to tell me if that team would be ahead of the U.S. Okay? If you were on the panel and you had power here to cast your vote. So the U.S. are 11th. 12th is Colombia.
Ahead.
13th is Morocco.
Ahead.
Now, come on. Remember, the U.S. beat Morocco in a friendly 3-0.
I know. Where did Morocco finish in the World Cup? Continue.
14th, almost inexplicably, 14th is Mexico.
I mean, there's an internet website, Twitter account, which is Place Where Cat Should Not Be, and it's cats in various places where they shouldn't be. Mexico are the cat in this scenario.
They can't be 14th.
They can't
be
there. They're on top of the microwave.
So you would at least have the U.S. ahead of Mexico.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, good. 15th is Uruguay.
I think they're better than us. I don't know.
I mean, think of it this way. We're going to play them in Copa America. Who do you think is going to be favored in that game?
Right. But it would be such a big result for us to if we were to overcome and beat them.
Uruguay are going to be favored.
Yes. So I would say I think they're better than us. Yeah.
I agree. 16th are Germany.
Come on. All right.
Yeah. Come on. 17th are Senegal.
More of a toss up. I think there's. I don't know. I don't know about that one. I couldn't make a definitive call.
I might have Senegal ahead of the U.S.
Okay.
18th are Japan.
They're better than us.
See, I think that one could be close. I think that'd be an interesting game. 19th are Switzerland.
Better than us.
Really?
Yeah, definitely. They are. You look at them in tournaments. I know they're kind of round of 16 quarterfinal fodder, but they are good. They're a good side.
I'd have to look at that one closer. 20th are Iran.
Not better than those.
Agreed. 21st are Denmark.
Mm, better than us, marginally.
Okay. 22nd, Ukraine.
It's a toss-up, I think.
Okay. 23rd, South Korea.
Not better than us.
Okay.
Currently, anyway.
Although, I mean, look, Sun would be like the greatest American player in history, and I don't know that it'd be close, but...
Right, yeah.
But I mean, it's more than one guy. Although, I mean, look, they got a guy who plays for PSG. Like,
they've got a guy who plays for Wolves.
It's a tough one.
It's closer than I'm saying, but right now, based on... Like, I mean, they had a poor result against Thailand recently. They had a shocking run under Klinsmann in the Asian Cup. So, okay.
All right. 24th, Australia.
We're better than them, I think.
Okay. 25th, Austria. Close. You're hemming and hawing, so it tells me. So basically what we're kind of suggesting is if there was a panel here, the U.S. are not in the top 20. It starts to get a little tricky somewhere
between.
But there's
nothing wrong with that.
No, there's not.
There's nothing wrong.
By the way, like Norway are 47th. If the U.S. played Norway and we beat them, we'd all be like, that's a great win.
That's a huge win over. Look at the talent they have. They've got two players we probably don't. There's no probably.
Probably.
We don't have an Odegaard and we don't have a Haaland. Like, yeah.
Probably.
So, yeah. I'm being generous here. Yeah, that was a fun exercise. Actually, I didn't find it as tedious as when you suggested it earlier.
That's low. See, always trust me, JJ. Just trust me.
I trust you more than most.
So if there was a panel, we would probably, and the U.S. were like 24th, we'd probably be like, all right, we're top 25. That's all right. I think we would, have we been too harsh? I'd be curious for people to, if the animals have a thought on this.
Here's the real problem. We don't play these teams enough to even have a clue.
Well, I mean, we talked about that last week.
Yeah, but look how far away we were at times against Holland, and look how far away we looked against Germany in that friendly in Connecticut. Those are good indicators, I think.
Copa America will be, I mean, part of the reason that tournament is fascinating, it's a really competitive tournament, but like, you're right, we don't get to test ourselves against Uruguay, and Argentina are number one in the world right now. Brazil are fifth, I think.
Yeah, and just for the guys that just... For the guys that are out there that are listening to me, first of all, this is very arbitrary off the top of my head analysis of these sides that we will play. All right, just accept that for the first point. The second point is you don't play in UEFA qualifying. I do. And let me tell you, these teams, when you draw them, they're like a Switzerland that you're like, oh, when you have them in a group, when you're a team like Ireland. So trust me, they are not dogs. They are good.
I've sat here and watched you.
Oh.
Just like whenever Georgia gets announced, I see the pained look on your face. So, I'm looking at Switzerland now. Granit Xhaka, Fabian Schär, Akanji. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
I mean, yeah.
Just saying. Look at their body count in recent tournaments as well. They're not duds. They're not duds, and we can't just say we're... And we can't even extrapolate from beating Mexico anymore that we're good.
I know. It's hard to know what that means.
Honestly,
right,
petition for us to be in UEFA qualifying. I'm throwing it on the table.
Sure. I mean, look, if Australia can be part of Asia, why can't we be part of UEFA?
Come on, let's get in there.
let's see. We continue now, JJ. I guess while we're talking UEFA, let's hone in a little closer in Germany. Bayer Leverkusen, they defeat Fortuna Dusseldorf 4-0 semifinals of the DFB Pokal. They're into the final. Make it 40 matches unbeaten for Leverkusen now. It's unbelievable.
And they did not spare the whip for Fortuna Dusseldorf. Like, it was 3-0 at halftime. It could have been 5-0. And they only scored, Florian Wirtz scored a penalty in the second half. That's all they scored in the second half.
Yeah.
Which is unbelievable.
So it's looking more and more now like a certainty that they're going to take home the double, at least that, in Germany, the League Cup double, as their opponents in the Pokal final will be Kaiserslautern, who are currently third from bottom in two Bundesliga, in the second division. It's just an unbelievable...
It could be City Watford in that. Remember that 6-0 FA Cup final when we declared the FA Cup dead? It could be something like that.
You know, it's made me wonder about Xabi Alonso, about his decision to stay with Leverkusen for next season. This team is going to win the league. Looks like they're going to win the cup. I mean, they're still, where are they in Europe right now?
They've got, is it West Ham?
I'll look it up. But it just made me wonder about, like, so Xabi Alonso's staying and, you know, they're going to experience all the success.
Yeah, West Ham.
Okay. And they're going to experience all the success this year. There's going to be the good feelings around the club are going to be so immense. You know, what kind of pull does he have within that club among the players where that decision for him to stay will have a trickle-down effect on what these guys decide to do? Because look, we know how this stuff goes. Like we talked about the other day, the natural order of things. Florian Wirtz is 20. He's got, seven goals and 10 assists in the league this season. Like at 20 years old, normally that guy, he's going to Bayern. Like that's just this. Grimaldo, Frimpong, you know, especially Frimpong, who's 23.
See, I think Grimaldo will stay because he's 28.
He's 28, so you have more of a chance with him.
Jack is going to stay because it's his home.
But like Victor Boniface is 23. He's got 10 goals, 7. Like these are guys who normally would go. But Xabi Alonso's decision to stay, I wonder if that will inspire this group of players. Let's see what we can do here in the Champions League. Like, is that going to happen, or are we just looking at kind of another Monaco Ajax situation?
I'm kind of with you on if you're suggesting that Alonso is enough to keep them. I think he is enough to keep. I think Wirtz will stay another year, anyways. The one I think will go, because it'd be just so hard for Leverkusen to resist the money, and they may need it just to keep everything in the black and stay. Stay in within their financial parameters will be Frimpong. Like it'll be the money from England coming for him is going to be big. So I think it's likely that they'll want to go in and play Champions League football with this guy next year, with this guy at the helm. He is managerially, he's the name on everybody's on the tip of everyone's tongue right now, Xabi Alonso. And there is a kudos and a gravitas to that. And they're, you know, it won't be lost on a lot of these players, or it shouldn't be lost on them, that you have a great season in the Bundesliga, you have everything going for you, and a big offer comes in from England and you go and it doesn't work out. There are quite a few examples of where, say for example, I doubt they'll be able to do it because they're going to have to sell and then sell to buy. But say for example, Chelsea were to come in for Frimpong, Frimpong would be best advised to stay put for his career, not for the money, for his career. And maybe they'll look at the example of their manager who has turned down the cash. You can only imagine like the money he'd be earning if he went to United or if he went to Liverpool as manager. And maybe
I know, but there's a different. He's a manager. He played at Liverpool. He played at Real Madrid.
I don't want to go over
Bayern
the ground.
Munich.
Yeah, I don't want to go over the ground we went over on the last pod.
I'm just saying it'd be hard for him to tell these guys don't go play for one of those giant clubs when his resume is littered with them.
Don't go yet. I get a sense of such good vibes that they may write it for another year, and a lot of those names will stay on. I hope that's the case.
I do too. Now look, these guys, they have a set window of what their earning potential is at its greatest. So I won't necessarily fault a guy if his wages can double by going to one of these clubs. Like, you know, I can understand that. But we talked about the other day, there's a cool factor of Xabi Alonso staying.
Yeah.
It would be cool to see this Leverkusen team that's gone 40 unbeaten. We'll see what that number is by the end of the season. That's upended Bayern Munich's reign over Germany. I want to see what this team does in Europe at the highest level in the Champions League. I'd like to see it. My gut is, if I had to lean one way on this, I think they'll keep this group intact. I feel that as well.
I think Alonso
must know that. Do you think he would agree to stay if he thought there was going to be a mass exodus of some of this talent?
No, I don't think so. I think this feeds into the whole idea that he thinks he can. There's more to be done with this side, and if he believes there's no more to be done, then he knows most or three quarters of them are staying.
Yeah.
So, and again, they're going to go into Champions League football. Like, to get this far, to win the league and everything, and then just to disperse would be terrible, and would be another indicator that the game is indeed gone. But I hope they stay with him. Like, it's like the Pied Piper leading them over the cliff. No, leading them into the Champions League. Speaking of cups, and we were talking about the DFB Pokal there. There's a absolute banger. You from the US Open Cup, from the Maryland Bobcats, no less. Now, they got hammered by Richmond Kickers 5-2. But Darwin Aspinall scored a goal that was so good, it ended up on SportsCenter on the top 10. He takes it out of his feet, no backlift, just wraps his foot around it, curls it into the top corner. And Christopher Harris, who is one of the founders of the frankly brilliant World Soccer Talk website. I constantly find myself ending up at that website. He tweeted out something funny. What does MLS have to do to get a goal featured on SportsCenter? US Open Cup appears on it for the second consecutive round. It is kind of funny since MLS pretty much left the shores of Connecticut for pastures, Apple. They literally pay it no mind. Apart now, Herc and Sebastian Salazar on Football America. I'm sure they mention MLS a lot, but
yeah.
Other than that, though,
it's not getting a ton of SportsCenter coverage, or I don't know how much is being talked about on First Take.
No, but up pops. Well, when Messi, I know, not First Take, but was it Around the Horn? One of those. When Messi joined, obviously, and the initial the initial stages of Messi mania. But we'll talk more about MLS.
Let's get into. I mean, look, it was not a good couple of days for the league in terms of their performance in the CONCACAF Champions Cup.
Awful.
MLS sides are just. We'll start with Columbus, the defending champions of MLS, could only draw at home against Tigres, which is not. I guess in itself, that's not a terrible result, although them not winning and it now shifting back to Tigres for the second leg, you don't feel good about it.
No.
And, you know, the thing that's most frustrating about this, like, look, Columbus won, they're defending champions in MLS. If you are that and you've kept your team together, which they have, and you have this manager in Wilfred Nancy, who we believe right now, we went through the MLS GM survey the other day. Right now, the belief is he's the best manager in this league. So you look at those things and you think, this team could win it. They could win this competition. And if they don't, JJ, and if they go out in this round, this is something that Cucho Hernandez is going to have to wear. Because he's now missed their last two matches for something having to do, he's not hurt. It's something having to do with a violation of team policies. And we don't know what that means.
They won't say what it is. We're hearing nothing from him. So we're in this nether zone of what's going on.
Yeah. And I mean, look, I'll say this about it. Look, my guess on this, I have no inside information on this. My guess is for it to cause him to miss two games, one of which is in the knockout round of a major tournament, I'd say whatever it is, it's probably not a small deal.
No.
Or if it is a small deal, it's a repeat offense of something that's a small deal, which kind of then, because it's, if you're a repeat offender of something, it turns it into a bigger deal. Wilfred Nancy would only say after the game, we just played a match and we're talking about Cucho. A little bit of an Iverson thing there. There's no answer to that. We don't play tennis. We play soccer. Soccer, there are 11 players on the field. Be patient. I know this is your job. Next question, please.
Yeah, I mean, sorry. Sorry, the press have every right to ask the question. And if you do not give them a satisfactory answer, the question will be repeated. It's as simple as absolutely. That is how it works. Can I just give props, please, for a moment, to one of the great survivors? Oh, a man who just left, actually quite a handsome man, I would say, too. Yeah. Built of sturdy French oak. Who left the shores of Europe. He had quite a reputation, but things weren't going right. He ended up in Mexico. He's now 38, and he's scoring glancing headers in the CONCACAF Champions League. And he looks as happy as a pig in muck. Pierre-André Gignac. Just watching him, that, first of all, fading away, what a brilliant header that was.
Yeah.
Redirected. He's class, Andrew. He really is.
And he's been tormenting MLS sides in this competition for a generation now.
He really has. It's amazing.
I mean, it's He is kind of one of like the great unheralded consistent goal scorers. It's 12 straight years,
yep,
double digit goals. He did it his last 3 years at Marseille, and he's done it all 9 years at Tigres. It's kind of a secret CONCACAF, not so secret, maybe for us because we don't really talk much at Liga MX, but he's a CONCACAF legend.
He is. He really is. He had, he's 36 caps for France as well.
Yeah.
He has 177 goals in 320 games for Tigres. That is, I hope they do something special for him when he hits, 200. What? It just, I don't know.
You think he'll get there? I mean, what do you say? He's at 177. He's 38 years old.
Like, I kind of feel like he might.
That might be two more seasons. He'd have to be 40.
How's he doing generally? Yeah, I don't know.
It's gonna be tough. We'll see. It's possible. Look, he's still banging him in. So
yeah.
But we'll see how Columbus are able to fare in the return leg. I wouldn't have a great feeling about it. And this Cucho thing is just so frustrating because you need him now. I don't know. I'm so curious what would cause him to miss multiple games. That can't be a small thing. And you're right, the manager not talking about it kind of only fuels it. Also, Club America essentially eliminate New England in the first
embarrassing
leg.
Oh, this was embarrassing.
A 4-0 thrashing in Foxborough.
Ugh. It was so easy for them. Like, it was just it really looked like men versus boys. They played through them so many times. Look, there was certain things that happened. Like, there was, I know, on it was the third goal. I mean, the goalkeeper's got to hold on to it. Who's not their starting goalkeeper? They dropped their starting goal. Caleb Porter dropped the starting goalkeeper. Tom Boger tweeted this. It puts it in a bit more context. Caleb Porter, after New England Revolution's 4-0 loss to Club America, they were the better team today. It's that simple. There's not much more I have to say. It's like having 11 DPs on the field. They essentially have 11 DPs. Rev's last five games, Andrew. No wins, two draws, three losses, -8 goal differential. I mean, I don't know. This feels like a club that under Bruce Arena had a couple of really positive seasons, and they were at one point the best team in the league.
Yeah.
And you felt something was happening there, and it I know Caleb Porter is an experienced manager. He's a good manager. There's no question. He just feels like he has a lot of a job on there because it's so negative. And I hate them playing at Foxborough. I hate them playing there, man. It's never full, even for big games. The field is terrible. I don't like it. I don't like it at all. And Taylor Twellman was tweeting something, and I guess it was what might or what could be. And he was urging the ownership, please, Boston, please, prayer, 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 prayer emoji. I promise you this, you build it and it's a top five market in MLS and it's not even close.
Well, they just released the plans of what a new stadium would look like.
Soccer specific one down on in the harbor.
Yeah.
So I do feel they have to get out of there. And, they have to take this club seriously again. But back to that game. Watching the highlights, man, just miserable night. Imagine you travel to Foxborough in the rain and the cold to watch them just get absolutely clipped.
Total no-show performance. I mean, he can say what he wants about Club America feeling like they have got 11 DPs. It might be some of this is your team's not that bad, though.
Yeah.
I mean, New England shouldn't be making it that easy.
No, definitely not.
And then also want to mention JJ Monterrey coming from behind, defeating Inter Miami 2-1 in Miami. No Messi in the lineup for Miami.
This is getting serious now.
Some of the worries there are starting to come true.
Yeah.
Some
people I've spoken to who are, how would I position them? They're not inside Inter Miami, but they're deeply embedded in U.S. soccer. I'll put it that way. I don't want to give away sources.
Okay.
And they feel like in MLS, you're not going to see a full run of Messi until after Copa America.
Well,
that's, yeah. And I'm not going to betray confidences or anything like that, but, okay.
That's interesting. I mean, it's truly, this is the situation where that's most unfortunate. Cause like, I think we all understand some regular season MLS games are just not going to happen for him. That's just the way it is. But like the whole purpose of this project with this grouping of talent, especially Messi, chiefly among them, is to win trophies at that club. And so like, if we could stomach him missing some MLS games, you kind of can't for this tournament. You want to see this group of Inter Miami players with Messi leading the line go up against the best of Liga MX. Like, I think
right.
That's one of the things that probably would have excited people the most about Messi going there, seeing how this team could compete against the best that Mexico has to offer. Maybe you could stomach him missing MLS games, but I thought this is a bitter pill to swallow that Miami are maybe now going to get. I mean, they Monterrey are going to be favored to bounce Inter Miami now. And that's a shame. Yeah. That's, you know, we don't know how long Messi's going to be at Inter Miami. And this is, you know, this is a tournament that would mean a lot to them.
I honestly think MLS will be okay with this scenario as long as he's ready for Leagues Cup. Leagues Cup is July 26th to August 25th.
Mm-hmm.
So immediately after Copa America.
Yeah. In terms of the game, interesting game. What a moment it could have been for Brandon Vasquez early. Ball falls right to him, right in front of goal. And he kind of just, I don't know, what do they say, JJ? Fluffs his lines, scuffs the shot.
Yeah. It
was an unfortunate moment for him. Would have been pretty cool for him to come back in this tournament and score a goal against a prominent MLS team. So can we talk about David Ruiz, who was sent off? And this is the stuff, if you're like David Beckham or obviously Tata Martino, this is the stuff that has got to just drive you crazy. You know, look, anytime a guy gets sent off in a tournament, you know, that's obviously a big deal. But I don't know. You can sometimes understand it when it's like, if it's a yellow that a guy gets to break up an attack or like an honest mistake of some sort, you can live with it. But this guy had just been yellow carded a couple minutes earlier. A couple minutes later now, what's he do? I don't know what the reason is. He just throws out an arm and hits a guy in the face. It's not serving any purpose defensively.
No.
It's just I mentioned Beckham because like you assemble all this talent, Messi, Busquets, Jordi Alba, Luis Suarez, like you bring all this talent in and it can be undone by some dude on your team who just loses his mind for a second and commits a dumb second yellow card offense. And he does so while they're leading. It leads to two goals going back the other way for Monterrey. It's just like, oh my God, it's the stuff that's got to drive coaches crazy.
It was nonsense because if I remember correctly, you know, it was in a nowhere position on the field, nothing. Yeah. And you're already dicing with them. I mean, he could have been off minutes before that. So like, what's he doing?
Well, so the broadcast team thought, so this
was
very
interesting. Third yellow.
They thought that he had ended up the night with three yellows. That the yellow he got a few minutes earlier, they thought was his second. In the stadium, people thought that was his second yellow and he was gone. And the Fox broadcast crew thought that. But it turns out, I guess it was some kind of like a, I don't know if there was some kind of paperwork error, but there was a yellow given out, I guess, for dissent prior to halftime that everyone thought was Ruiz's. It was actually Jordi Alba's. So whatever the confusion was, the refs, I don't think, got it wrong, but there was confusion over who that yellow was given to. But there was a world where for a little while there, people thought this guy had just received a gift from God and was still on the field with two yellows. And then he goes and commits an even dumber one right after that.
We remember the greatest three yellow incident of all time. We all recall Graham Paul, Argentina versus Croatia, World Cup 2006, where he gave three yellow cards to Josip Simenic. And I remember. Yeah, so Croatia's centre-back received his first yellow card in the 61st minute for sticking a hand out to stop Harry Kewell. His second came in the 90th minute when he was guilty of a poor challenge in the middle of the pitch. Simenic saw the yellow card and walked away slyly without being shown the red card that should have come with it. At the end of the match, Simenic then berated the referee to get his third yellow card of the game and the elusive red he should have been handed minutes earlier. Croatia were already playing the final 5 minutes with 10 minutes after Dario Simic was sent off for picking up two yellows himself. Why wasn't Simenic sent off by Graham Paul? I'm reading from Sporting News. Referee Graham Paul was in charge and he struggled to understand why he didn't send off Siminik after his second yellow card. Paul stressed he used his usual system to identify and caution players, but suggested Siminik's Australian accent may have confused him. I've read this autobiography, by the way. This is how much of a loser I am. Although I have replayed the incident 1,000 times in my head, I don't really know why I did what I did, Paul wrote in his 07 biography, Seeing Red. I can't fully understand why I got it wrong and why I failed to send off Siminich. Aussie Joe certainly speaks with a broad Australian accent. Maybe, just maybe, that is where the confusion set in.
Mistakes happen. I don't know.
Yeah.
There's not an explanation. He made a mistake. Like,
Paul was the first celebrity ref, by the way. He was the first one that was like, oh, it's Graham Paul. And, yeah. You know, he'd make business of kind of before a game going over and chatting to like David Beckham and whoever was the big player that was involved in the game, Thierry Henry and all that. He was quite insufferable. And his autobiography, you get that vibe. But anyway, so that's what I thought of immediately after that.
Yeah.
By the way, just before we get out of this game, the Rodriguez winner is a gorgeous goal.
It's a great goal. It's born out of a terrible mistake, though. I mean, just clear the ball. Diego Gomez, in a dangerous area, in the middle of his own box, lets one sort of just run by him.
But he bends it around Drake Callender gorgeously.
Rodriguez has a lot to do when it gets to him. It is a great finish. What a great goal. And that's brutal on Inter Miami. We'll see. I hope Messi plays in the second leg. I can't say I have a good feeling about it traveling to Monterrey. I don't know.
I hope he does.
Yeah,
my gut and some of the things I've been hearing, like I suggested, is that he will be minded in a big way. There's not going to be a mad run of Messi action before Copa America. That's my gut. Hey.
Ooh, it would be, I mean, he's not going to play in the Olympics too, is he? I know that there's been talk.
He's going to jam it all in, Andrew. Oh,
come on. Well, we'll see.
He has a bucket list of things to do before he's 40.
Let's see. This weekend, JJ, what you watching? We've got a few things here I want to mention. Saturday, 12:30 Eastern time, the U.S. women face Japan in the She Believes Cup. Kind of their last big test this tournament before they go off for the Olympic competition in Paris. You know, we didn't mention this. We probably should. Quite a controversy right now going on with the U.S. women's national team with regards to Corbin Albert, who really emerged in the W Gold Cup. So for those, I guess, who this has been off their radar, I'm just going to read quickly here from The Athletic. I think it was Meg Linehan. Corbin Albert had posted some material on TikTok, which is quite controversial. It says here in The Athletic, the videos that were publicly shared by Albert include a sermon given in a Christian worship space talking about how being gay and, quote, feeling transgender is wrong. The activity garnered widespread attention from women's soccer fans, but it was not out of the ordinary on Albert's profile. Among the posts that Albert created on her TikTok profile was one from 2023's 4th of July weekend showing her family taking turns stating that, quote, their pronouns are USA. With Corbin participating in the video. The post no longer appears on her profile as of Thursday afternoon. Fans had previously surfaced one of Corbin's likes on Instagram via a screen cap with a post from a meme account that read, quote, God taking time off performing miracles to make sure Megan Rapinoe sprains her ankle in her final ever game.
Aye.
End quote. The screen cap shows Albert's Instagram handle, though as of March 28th, the original post appears to have been deleted entirely. It is unclear when it was posted on Instagram. Should be noted that Megan Rapinoe did not sprain her ankle in that final game. She tore her Achilles.
Yeah.
So that brings us to now, as all of this has surfaced, and I guess our thoughts on this. Here, I'll start with my views. I'd be curious for yours as well. My views on this have sort of changed a little bit over time.
Right.
And look, I know that people of all different beliefs listen to this podcast, and I know that many of you recognize where JJ and I tend to fall on things without us ever necessarily explicitly stating what our political leanings may be, but I think people might be able to guess. And I respect that people who may feel differently than us are still willing to listen to this show. I think that's cool. We can disagree about certain things, but we still kind of rise above it and can talk soccer with each other. I think that's what's great, and that's kind of one of the roles that sports serves. With regards to this one, however, I've kind of moved further in one direction. I used to sort of be like, well, we're in an era now where we ask our athletes to be open about their beliefs. And there are two sides to that coin. And one of the sides is a side I may not like, but right. We've opened that Pandora's box now, and we all have to respect that. That was kind of where I was.
Okay.
You know what? Like, I've moved away from that belief, and I've moved more in the direction of there's a difference to me between simply stating your beliefs and being intolerant or worse, hurtful to a specific group of people who may already feel vulnerable. Like saying you believe in the Second Amendment is a belief. Saying that gay and trans people are bad is a direct attack on a human being who has done nothing to you. So mm-hmm. I've moved towards the side of kind of like, if you are amplifying tolerance, I'm cool with that. And like, I'm kind of looking to mute hurtful speech that flies in the face of that. Like if I'm always on the side of tolerance, then I'll always be able to look myself in the mirror, no matter how the world kind of changes around me. No one is hurt by showing tolerance. People are hurt by hate speech. That's kind of where I fall on this.
I'm with you 100%. I'm also of the view, like, why does she need to post this? Like, why does anyone need to know her beliefs on these things? Now, is it better that we do know them? I mean, I guess so. I think where I can consider, I was thinking about it today, and I read Meg Linehan's piece, which she wrote about, is there any way for U.S. soccer, the U.S. women's national team, to not censor her, but to not call her up? Is there grounds for her to be thrown out of the, based on what she said? I don't want that.
I don't know if that's necessarily helpful.
But it wouldn't be. But there's clauses in which, you know, conduct that would not benefit the team, basically. And I mean, if you're taking the field with people who are, you know, who are queer, who are lesbian, who are whatever, bisexual, and you have these comments, I mean, that could be seen conduct unbecoming, or you know, that doesn't help the team, and therefore it would fall under one of the collective bargaining clauses and one of the codes of conduct. But I don't want that either.
No.
I don't want that. You see, it's a problem. Like, there's certain strands of the Protestant faith, of evangelical faith, where, you know, these issues are huge. But like, the Bible that Catholics or just regular Anglicans read, it's the same thing. It says the same things in it. We just, we pick and choose. We don't get involved in that stuff. It's not to the front. If you base your morality, though, and your belief system upon what's written in either the Bible, the Torah, the Quran, you're going to run into these problems, folks. Seriously. There's stuff in all of those books you best probably put to the back of your mind. Don't think about it. And when people profess their faith in this way, this stuff is going to come up. So how do we deal with it? And
yeah.
And that's what I've been thinking about. I mean, her response, Corbin Albert clearly understood the ramifications for her career. She wrote, "I want to sincerely apologize for my actions on social media. Liking and sharing posts that are offensive, insensitive, and hurtful was immature and disrespectful, which was never my intent. I'm really disappointed in myself, and I'm deeply sorry for the hurt I have caused to my teammates, other players, fans, friends, and anyone who was offended. I truly believe that everyone should feel safe and respected everywhere and on all playing fields. I know my actions have not lived up to that, and for that I sincerely apologize. It's an honor and a privilege to get to play this sport on the world stage, and I promise to do better." That's pretty much renouncing her feelings.
I think it's exactly why she should be called into camp. Because if, let's say they, first of all, I didn't even know that was an option, really. But like, if they don't, you further ostracize this person and you push them further into their own corner.
Yeah.
I think the way the U.S. have handled this, the cap, you know, look, she's 20. All right, she's a kid. And like the captains of this team, Lindsey Horan and Alex Morgan, the co-captains, like probably Alex Morgan especially, who's been around for a long time now, these are probably childhood heroes of Corbin Albert's.
Yeah.
She's now walking into this room, and like I saw Becky Sauerbrunn posted about this.
Yeah.
Megan Rapinoe obviously had a response considering part of this was a direct attack on her.
Yeah.
Megan Rapinoe had a pretty intense response to this, and Becky Sauerbrunn responded to it by saying, well said. You know, these are legends, and Corbin Albert is 20, and she's walking into this room. And like, now she's going to be spoken to by Alex Morgan, Lindsey Horan, players like that. And I think it's, for someone that young, you learn. Like, look, a lot of people, like, I don't think this needs to be a permanent stain on Corbin Albert, is what I'm saying. I think a lot of people had a worldview in, because when she posted this stuff, she's in her late teens, right? A lot of people probably had a worldview in their late teens that they wouldn't necessarily be proud of today.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
But,
yeah.
Right. But you learn, you grow. And like, I think her apology, I'm going to take it as genuine. And she's probably been brought up a certain way, surrounded by people who also feel that way. And so she made these comments kind of like a little immature, not really thinking about the negative effect they have, because she's never really interacted all that much, maybe, with people who could be hurt by them. But right. Like, you're famous now. And you're in locker rooms with people who are openly gay, and your words carry more weight. And so, like, I think for the leaders of the team, like Morgan, Horan, I think they're handling it the right way, expressing disappointment openly, but like keeping the conversations behind closed doors. They're going to kind of protect this girl a little bit. And like, I think everyone kind of moves forward with, you know, we'll judge you by what you do next, not by what you did before. If you learn from this, and maybe her beliefs don't change, but her respect towards others certainly can, you know.
I honestly think, you know, for a lot of these issues, is it a maxim, is it a code to live by, whatever you'd call it, mind your own business. If that was applied, that would be huge. What people do in as Tony Soprano says, with the consenting adults in the privacy of their own bedrooms, as long as it's consenting and of age, but like, why, who cares? Like, who honestly gives a damn? Yeah. But the problem is as well that she's not, the US women's national team is not, it's not, it's more than a football team. It's been at the forefront of what we would say the culture war has been in this country every time it's played, every time it's taken the field. I mean, this is a sporting organization that, you know, has taken on a sitting president. Or members of its players have taken on sitting presidents and have criticized openly and have been responded to by that. You know, this is a different field. This is clearly being established as a group of progressive individuals who hold certain values and hold their teammates to those values. Even in her absence, even in her retirement, Megan Rapinoe is still pulling strings.
Yeah.
That's just the way it is, and Corbin Albert has run afoul of that. And I want to be clear, I don't want to see her banned, nor does Meg Linehan's article suggest that she can be. Meg talked about the difference between the NWSL, which is a private for-profit company, and US Soccer, which is a not-for-profit charity, essentially, a not-for-profit organization. So there are two differences here. The NWSL can say, you know, we're not denying your freedom of speech or your freedom of religion, but we are invoking our freedom of association and we don't want you representing our league. And there have been some players that have not been drafted into the NWSL because of the things that they've said. So look, I feel bad. I feel terrible for people who would be directly hurt by this, and they see her as a hero and bursting onto the scene and scoring. I mean, she scored a banger the other day into the top corner, and for people to see that and then to be let down by this. But like you said, she's 20.
Right.
And yeah, what's that phrase? Maybe show her a little bit of grace and that they'd give her the opportunity to learn. And I thought the apology was fairly fulsome. She can't undo the stuff she posted. Yeah, I still believe, you know, it's just an inescapable problem. If you are a part of some of these churches who hold these moral views, and expression of those moral views is part of your bearing witness, then this is going to constantly crop up, and especially in an era where where these issues of gay people, of trans rights are to the forefront. It's always going to be there. And I think, you know, minding your own business, let people live, just start from there, you know?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. If you're going to pick one thing from Jesus, judge not lest ye be judged, and move from there.
Also, what we're watching.
I will still judge you, by the way.
No, that's fair. Saturday night, 7:45, El Tráfico. Always a fun one. I should say also Saturday night, JJ, is the Final Four, with one of the two nights of the year where I allow myself to get an enormous bag of Doritos and go absolutely wild.
I worry about you.
I look forward to it.
Do you have them purchased?
Not yet.
So if potato chips, particularly Irish crisps, as we call them, come into our house, like Tato's or King or any of those brands, they'll be eaten. I cannot stay away from them. So are you the same way with Doritos? You like, if they're there and you know they're going to be eaten.
Yeah, the Super Bowl and the Final Four are usually the two nights of the year where I allow myself to just, I'm going to get the biggest bag in the world. I get, like, look, you can make whatever analogies you want here, but like, if a sex addict was allowed to two nights a year just run wild in like at the Bunny Ranch in Nevada, like, this is what we're dealing with.
Now I've got visions of you in that like Hugh Hefner pool, but there's no women
covered in Dorito dust.
Yeah, that's it.
And then Sunday, 10:30 a.m., Manchester United with another opportunity to dramatically damage Liverpool's quest for a trophy.
Oh, thanks for framing it like that.
Well, I mean, this will be on everyone's mind. The memory of the FA Cup is still...
I'm not over it.
Hasn't scabbed yet.
Oh, I'm not over it. I mean, I can laugh at United being abysmal against Brentford and enjoy Liverpool beating Brighton. All I want, that is still right there, gnawing away at me. One of our listeners asked the question, might as well bring it up now. Would I prefer that the 7-0 was erased, that it never happened, and not have the late heartbreak? So you get the win in the FA Cup, there's no late heartbreak against United at Old Trafford, but the 7-0 is gone.
Do you still win that set? Like, you win that game, what, 2-1 or something? Like, is
something
that...
like that, yeah. Okay. So I think that's the Faustian pact.
The 7-0 is gone.
No, I couldn't have that.
But this is Klopp's last season. The FA Cup would have been his final act, potentially, as a manager for this team. Could have been against Man City.
You think I sat at, get rid of the 7-0?
It could have been Klopp, FA Cup final, Manchester City, in his last game, a chance to beat that team one more time. I think you got to lose the 7-0 so you can have that moment, that potential.
God, it was so funny, though. So good. Anyway, yeah, deaf nerves. Oh my God. Saturday morning, I'm waking up before I go to your place. Because we're hanging out. I'm gonna be...
Well, the game is Sunday. Are you gonna be over for that?
No, I'll probably go home. Okay. I can't be around you. No, it's not that. It's the nerves that'll start Saturday morning. Knowing that's on the horizon.
Wow, full 24 hours of nerves.
Oh, it's them. Yeah. Of course.
But you've been laughing at them for 10 years now.
It doesn't matter. That's not how rivalries work.
Well, I understand, but you know, you're usually so cavalier about them. And
I went to Pitt Penn State the first time they played in 20 years nearly, or well, almost 20 years, in 2016 at the in Pittsburgh. I couldn't believe how they hated each other. Couldn't believe. I said, you haven't even played that regularly, and this rivalry's still a thing. Hate.
Oh, well, we know that, though. I mean, look, Newcastle and Sunderland I know they play this year in the FA Cup, but, like, who knows how long.
So it doesn't matter, like, if you see them a lot, if you're laughing at them, the rivalry doesn't change.
No, I understand.
Do you?
All right, well, there you go. That was a nice heaping pie of Caught Offside.
Covered all the issues. Xabi Alonso's future. The culture wars in America. Andrew's Doritos problem.
Yeah, it was all in there. We will, of course, be back on Monday with another edition where we'll take a look back on another huge weekend of Premier League action as this title race continues to heat up. And we'll see, of course, you know, like I mentioned, El Tráfico. In MLS, there was one I didn't mention. I'm actually very... On Monday, remind me, I do want to talk a little bit about Toronto FC Vancouver because they're... I think that one is a very interesting early season game of two teams that have come out of the gates pretty strong. Toronto, yes, especially coming off of that disaster of a season a year ago. So I think that's a nice, that's an interesting early season matchup. So we'll do a little bit of that. Should be another fun one, of course. JJ, I'll see you this weekend. I can't wait. That'll be lovely. See the baby. You'll get to see my boys. What a fun time. Nice wholesome time it's going to be. Looking forward to it greatly. So that'll be fun. Hey, I got nothing left, JJ. To you, I say...
Check you later, fun boy.
I'll see you.
Take care.
You've been listening to the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.